Here's an interesting podcast. Derbyshire's stately ghosts. With more stately homes open to the public in Derbyshire than probably any county in Great Britain, it's pretty obvious that they've got some incredible stories to tell. It's not just ghosts, but it's ghosts and history. You can't get closer to a ghost story than knowing the actual history behind the place. And sometimes the family that lives in these stately homes and their staff are not the only residents that a visitor may well encounter when wandering around many of Derbyshire's stately homes that over the years have been touched across the centuries by so many turbulent events such as sieges, battles, murder, torture, and of course executions as well. This week I'm going to be talking about Sutton Scarsdale. How many folk driving along the M1 have noticed that large, gaunt, stately home standing on the other side of the motorway opposite Bolsover Castle? This sad, roofless building is all that's left of possibly one of the finest 18th century houses in Derbyshire. However, it is now luckily in the safe hands of English Heritage. The Manor of Sutton was granted by Wulfric Spot to Burton Abbey in 1002, but when William the Conqueror invaded us in 1066, it was given to one of his knights, Roger de Poitou. The first house erected on the site dates back to the 13th century, when it was the home to the de Sutton family. By 1489, a family by the name of Leake was living on the site. In 1611, Sir Francis Leake was created a baronet, but amazingly his son and heir was also granted a peerage before his father's death and became First Lord Danecourt. He was a staunch royalist during the English Civil War, and in 1643 defended Sutton Scarsdale against a siege by 500 of Cromwell's soldiers with two cannons. After prolonged resistance, he had to surrender the house and bury his dead in the grounds. He was forced to pay £4,000 to save his estate from total destruction, and also had to report to Sir John Jell, who was Parliamentary Commandant of Derbyshire, as a prisoner of war. After the victors move on to their next royalist house, Sir Francis fled to Newark. While living in Newark, he entertained King Charles I in August, October and November, becoming a loyal friend and ally to the King, who created him Earl of Scarsdale. He remained in Newark while the town was under siege and marched out at the head of his troops when the town surrendered in 1646. When King Charles I was executed in 1649, Sir Francis Leake had a grave dug for himself at Sutton Scarsdale. Every Friday he would dress in sackcloth and lie in his own open grave in love and remembrance of his beloved king. The house that we see today had its origins in 1724 and was built for Nicholas Leake, the fourth and last Earl of Scarsdale, who died a bachelor in 1736. The house and the estate were sold to offset the enormous debts accrued from the rebuilding work on the house. The fourth Earl only employed the best architects, builders, and Italian plasterers, and no expense was spared. The house was eventually acquired by Robert Arkwright, grandson of Sir Richard Arkwright, who was looking for a grand house to suit his position in the county. Legend has it that not long after Robert took up residence, he dug up all the Leakes from their family crypt so that he could replace them with his own family members. Fancy digging up Leakes in your own garden. In 1720, Robert's son William sold the estate to a speculator who slowly began to dismantle the house, selling its contents and fixtures such as fireplaces, panelling, and even staircases. Some of these can actually be seen today in museums in Philadelphia and Los Angeles. The shell that remained was due for demolition and was only saved at the 11th hour by Sir Osbert Sitwell of Renishaw Hall. He came upon the building the night before its demolition and bought it there and then with a view to restoring it to its former glory. Sadly, this was a dream that it was never able to fill. But what are the ghosts of Sutton Scarsdale? Surely this once fine house must lament its own demise. What is left of the interior of the hall gives rise to stories of dismembered, floating arms beckoning visitors towards the entrance to the cellars. English Heritage has been renovating the house, and staff working on this project have reported the smell of tobacco when no one has been smoking. Footsteps are frequently heard in the inky blackness of the cellars, where it is believed some awful deed was once committed. Lights of various colours appear and hover for several seconds before vanishing. Something happened to me at Sutton Scarsdale a few years ago when I went there to take part in a BBC Radio Derby live broadcast with Chris Baird. We arrived at the front of the hall, put up the mast of the radio car to establish a link back to their base in Derby. We knew we would not experience any problems with the signal, as there is a radio mast just very, very close by. Just as we were about to go live, the signal just disappeared. Thinking quickly, we called the studio from Chris's mobile, but with the same result, no signal. Undeterred, we drove around to the other side of the hall and attempted to put up the mast again on our car, and guess what? No signal. Now, getting a little desperate, we both tried our mobile phones, which had different providers, but neither of us got any signal. We had to give up and drive away, and as we got 100 yards from the hall, we received a call to Chris's mobile asking us what had happened. To this day, neither of us nor anyone at Radio Derby can provide a logical explanation, but I can certainly provide a paranormal explanation. Family legend recounts the romantic story of Sir Nicholas Leake, who, before leaving to fight in the Crusades, took out his sword and cut his wedding ring in half, giving half to his wife and keeping the other half for himself as a good luck charm. He was captured during the fighting and spent many years incarcerated in terrible conditions. His will to survive came from the hope that one day he would be reunited with his beloved wife. One night, while dreaming of home, he felt himself being swept up by a rushing wind, which finally dropped him in the porch of the church next to the hall. He went straight to the front door of Sutton Scarsdale and demanded to be let into his home. But no one would allow this strange, filthy figure admission into the house. He remembered that he still had his half-wedding ring, which he gave to a servant to take to the mistress of the house, his wife. She put the two pieces of the ring together and realised that her beloved husband had returned. Although this is believed to be a legend, but I genuinely believe that A, there's no smoke without fire, and B, that there's usually grains of truth in most myths and legends. There are many reported cases of living people projecting their images huge distances to loved ones. They're known as crisis apparitions. Every year after his safe return, Sir Nicholas had bread baked for the poor people of the parish. Each loaf was inscribed with a letter N. One year the loaves were forgotten, and a large well on the estate overflowed, causing widespread floods and damage to the crops. The bread loaves were quickly made and baked, stamped with the customary letter N, and distributed to the poor, and the well instantly receded. Last but by no means least is the tale of the ghost of a sobbing lady dressed in white who is often seen gliding between the hall and the church. No one knows who she is. Perhaps she is one of the past inhabitants lamenting the demise of this once great house.